You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Looney Lewis, and today I have the honor of introducing a very special guest to the show, Peter Montoya. Peter is a rare individual. You see, there are gifted speakers, best-selling authors, and successful entrepreneurs, but rarely do you find all three in one person. Peter Montoya is that rare exception, a thought leader, skilled orator, and leadership strategist with real life experience driving his insights and ideas. His business acumen, inspirational journey, human behavioral insight, and decades of real life experience have helped him to become one of the most inspirational and sought out speakers and coaches specializing in leadership development and creating high performance teams. Peter is the best-selling author of The Brand Called You and his latest book, Meetings Without Walls and Leadership Power. He's also a sought out and highly motivational keynote speaker and leadership development strategist specializing in developing high performance team. Peter, welcome to the show.
Looneed, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I mean, you have been seen quite all over the place, right? CNN, NBC, Yahoo, Forbes, you are well known. So it's an honor and privilege to have you on the show today, Peter.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, go ahead and tell us a little bit about your journey thus far.
when you kind of graduate from college, which I did with a degree in political science, you don't really know where you're going to end up. So I started off working in sales for the biggest motivational speaker in the world for maybe 4 or 5 years, where I traveled on the road and I lived in 22 major cities over a period of 5 years. So I was in a city for 2 or 3 months at a time. Then I started an advertising agency. I wrote a book called The Brand Called You, and I did maybe 3,000 keynote presentations on personal branding to financial service professionals. Then in 2006, I started a technology company. And then in 2018, I sold that technology company. And along the way, I've had various other firms. So I've had advertising agencies, technology companies. I've had CrossFit gyms, insurance brokerages, finance companies. And now I'm really back to my first love, which is that of leadership development.
That is quite a journey. And you are you have quite a bit of experience, and it all led you back to, as you say, to leadership. And throughout your exposure or your work, the technology company, did you find yourself in those leadership roles and having to work with teams? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes. So, I really went through my own leadership journey, even though I've been quite focused on leadership my whole entire life. I wasn't really a good leader of my companies until maybe about 2011 and 2012. So I've always been a great personal producer. I have got ADHD, which really in some regards is a hindrance, in other regards is a superpower. I can sit down in front of my desk and I can work for 12 to 14 hours at a time, just completely focused, not lifting my head up, not taking a breath, and I can just work. So I kind of spent the first 15 years of my business career working really hard. I would hire people. I would point to the top of a mountain and I would say, charge that mountain and let me know when it's done. And then I wouldn't give them any guidance or any training or barely check with them along the way. And I really only got incremental results out of my company. The performance and the growth of my organizations was no more than my personal production. And it wasn't until 2011 that I really had a sea change in how I thought about leadership. And what I came to realize is leadership is not only about modeling the behavior that you want, but leadership really is about leadership development. Mm-hmm. The whole goal of a leader is to make other leaders better than you. That really is your job as a leader. So I then started investing about 40% of my time in developing my people's leadership skills. And once I did that, we started getting exponential results out of the company. The company grew exponentially, 50 and 70% per year. And that's where I got a much better, not only a return on my investment, but also I found it to be the most satisfying thing I've ever done, was actually seeing my people transform.
Mm-hmm. Empowerment. Yeah, empowering them and actually utilizing their skills, their skill set effectively.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
That's you said something very intriguing there. You said your personal growth, your leadership development, that had to happen for your business to grow, right? You can't be at the same level personally in terms of your personal development and expect your company to skyrocket. You got to grow with it.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think that, you know, most business owners get kind of stuck in a rut of kind of incremental growth. They're always kind of looking at how hard they can work and they're making the business grow. But if you really want exponential growth in your business, you've got to be investing in your people. And it's the most amazing thing about leadership development is when you're teaching other people to become leaders, your own leadership skills are growing.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I would like to know, what does it take to make a good leader? Because you said when you first started out, your first few companies, you were not. You know, you said, here's the mountain, charge for it. You didn't give him any guidance. And you said you admit you weren't a good leader. So what makes a good leader in your opinion?
Yeah, it's always a great question. And I actually look at leadership on two different axes. So on one axis, which is your y-axis, which goes up and down, that's effectiveness. And so one gauge of leadership is how effective they are. And the second gauge of leadership is how good they are, which means they do good things. So we can look at Abraham Lincoln, and he was very, very effective. He more or less saved the Union and was kind of the first real fighter for civil rights. He was very, very effective. And we would also say he's good. Now, Hitler was also very effective. However, he wasn't very good. So we want a leader who is not only effective, which is the ability to get results. That's my definition for leadership, is the ability to achieve intended results. We also want those results to be how the rest of us, from a moral sense, would be as something beneficial for other people. So if people are just achieving results that are selfish or self-centered or only for their own gain, we would not put them in the category of a good leader. A good leader who is someone who achieves good results, but for the benefit of many.
Yeah, to bring the team together, to uplift the team.
Yeah, uplift the team and also uplift, you know, the greater humanity. What contribution are you making such that humanity is actually better because you were here?
Yeah, adding value. Earl Nightingale has a really good quote that says, you know, our reward in life will always be in exact proportion to our contribution, our service to others.
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful quote. I just love that quote. That's great.
Hit it right on the nail. Tell us a little bit about your book, Meetings Without Walls.
Well, if you're anything like me, Luneed, you've been stuck on nonstop Zoom meetings for the last 6 months. Since March 13th is when I came into self-quarantine, and obviously, my world pivoted quite a bit, where I spend most of my time in my office now on Zoom meetings rather than in person. And so you probably have. I've been in tons and tons of Zoom meetings that have been ineffective, and I've been in Zoom meetings that have been effective too. Mm-hmm. So we really wanted to write a book for the ages that actually talks about and breaks down how to be effective in a meeting. So when we look at the acts of leadership, there are six different acts of leadership. And when everyone thinks about a leader, they always think about a leader standing on stage and being an orator and motivating people. Well, of the six acts of leadership, that is number six. It is the least common act of what we actually do. And let me share with you some of the other acts of leadership by how often we do them. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, speaking on a stage is one. We got one-on-one meetings where you're actually coaching or developing another person. We have our in-person, we have communication, so email communication and reports and stuff like that. We have our personal production. Personal production is, the work that we actually do, whatever kind of work we're doing and how we show up in the course of the day. And the most common act of leadership is actually meetings. So most white-collar professionals spend upwards of 50% of their days in meetings. It is an incredibly common act of leadership. So how we participate in those meetings, first of all, when we are being, you know, part of a greater meeting and we are actually in the meeting and we're actually, you know, contributing, that is a big deal. And then more importantly, when we facilitate meetings, when we're actually organizing the meeting and trying to get an outcome, that is a very important act of leadership. So we wanted to write a book, which is actually a leadership book, to share with people how they can get the most out of meetings.
And so I have the fifth one. What's the sixth?
Oh, gosh, good question. I was doing these off the top of my head, and I knew I was going to forget one of them. Oh, gosh.
No
Give me
worries.
A minute, and maybe it'll come back to me.
No problem, because I want to recap for the audience at the end, so we have time. That's really, really insightful, the way you outline what happens in different ways that we have meetings, because there are tons of them. I didn't think of speaking on stage as an act of leadership, right? And one-on-one, so to have it broken down in that way with communication via email or text or Skype, whatever it is, to be part of leadership. So essentially, when I think about all that, is you really have to be mindful with your every interaction.
You really do, all the time now. And I just remember the sixth one. It's actually number four on the list. It's actually sales and negotiating. Sales and negotiating is a really important act of leadership that almost every single leader at some point is either selling people on ideas or a product or service, or they're negotiating, doing some kind of deal making.
Yeah, we're selling ourselves every day, right? We're selling who we are. We're selling our leadership. We're selling our products. We're selling our services every single day.
Every single day.
So yeah, I can definitely see that. You have soft skills. Let's talk about soft skills. What's the hard truth about soft skills, right? Because we spend a lot of time on hard skills, but never looking at EQ, emotional intelligence, as a soft skill, and how that impacts leadership.
Very true. So our hard skills, when it comes to our employment, are the skills that we usually need to do our job. So let's plumbing or accounting or sales or marketing or finance. So those are our hard skills, the skills that actually are important to get our jobs. However, they've looked time and time again, they've done the research, and it turns out if you want to advance in your job and keep your job, your soft skills is what helps you keep and actually advance your career.
Mm.
So soft skills are all the other things which we need in order to get things done. It is our ability to manage our time. It is our ability to effectively communicate. It is the skill of absolute responsibility. It is integrity. It is our ability to get along with other people. So all of those other soft skills is actually what helps us keep our jobs and grow our jobs. And unfortunately, it's not usually what we put on our resume, but it's even more important than what we put down on our resume.
Right. And that stuff, can it be taught? Can leaders foster these soft skills in their employees and their team members?
Oh, yes. Not only can they, but they absolute must on a regular basis. You know, so many businesses, and I was, a small business. And when we were a small business, we were only could eat what we hunted. So we were always on the trying to generate new revenue so we could eat on a regular basis. And we oftentimes didn't make time for training. And I really regret that. That was one of the major things we changed in 2012, is we started investing heavily in training. So anytime you can be bringing your people together, either in one-on-one meetings or in small groups, and actually training them, I've got a phenomenal module now on active listening. Once I've learned about active listening and understand it now better, it's probably one of the most important skills for any leader, is knowing how to actively listen. And any of those skills you can actually train your employees on so they're more present, make better decisions, and are more effective with their time. You're going to get an exponential return on your dollars invested there.
Yeah, I can see that. It's totally worth it. However, most training is really task oriented. It's transactional. It's training on how to do the work, how to complete the work properly and quickly. But yeah, those other soft skills are not highly trained on in certain organizations.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And so, the way most organizations look at training is kind of this bolt-on, which they do every once in a while. They kind of go, okay, we need some training, and they just stick it on. And I really think that training is probably the most important job of a leader. And now I think that leaders should be either leading the training themselves, and or it should be, part of their mandate. It's one of the things they actually do themselves rather than delegating it to some kind of training department or HR department. It is a really important job for every leader of an organization.
Yeah, it starts with empowering the team members and the employees. You have a term, demystifying empowerment. What does it mean, and how can we do it? How do we get it?
Oh, that's a great question, Lanid. So Lanid, let me ask you a question and I'll give you the answer. Here's the question. Lanid, do you want more power? Yes or no, and why?
Yes, I want more power because to me, it's liberating. It's a sense of freedom.
Excellent. Very good. So about half the people I ask that question of, they tell me no. And the reason they say no is they go, you know, I don't want more power. Then they have this projection of somebody who's powerful is somebody who's some kind of fat cat in a corner office controlling and manipulating other people and has, you know, kind of some this hegemonic goal of attaining more power just so they can manipulate other people or take advantage of other people. And that's not what power is. So power is the ability to achieve intended results. Mm-hmm. That's it. Power is the ability to achieve intended results. And no matter what you want in your life that you currently don't have, it's always an act of power. So for some people, you know, their car may be broken down and coming up with the money and getting their car to the repair shop and getting it fixed is an act of power. For other people, it's being able to go on vacation once a year. For somebody else, it might be improving their relationship with their spouse or with their children. That is an act of power. So no matter what you want in life that you currently do not have, it is all an exercise in power. So if anybody asks or offers you more power, the answer is enthusiastically yes, because everything that you might want to achieve in life and maybe all the power that you want to put to use is for the benefit of others. And I really hope that it is. So you're actually making other people's lives better. But power is, you know, is basically the currency of how leaders get things done.
I love that. Power is the ability to achieve intended results. Yeah, it's giving you that power that you're a creator. You're creating your results. You're creating your surrounding, your circumstances. You are in charge.
That's absolutely one of the probably first axioms of any leader is to recognize that, yes, they own everything in their life. They own all the results, every situation as it is now. And that is what gives them the empowerment to change it. Ownership is the first fundamental of all power.
I'm glad I passed that test, Peter. Yes, I want power because it gives me freedom. Freedom to create.
Yes.
You have the it factor, right? Why some people have it, quote, and others don't. Elaborate on that for us.
So, you know, when I was younger and I started first going to personal development courses and I started getting into business in my college years and in my early 20s, and I was kind of impressed by certain people. I'm like, gosh, they really have it. I just want to follow them and things like that. You know, what is the it quality that they have? And I thought they had some form of charisma or something about their personality. And it turns out that's not really it at all. What it really is they have incredible intentionality about where they are headed, number one. And then number two, they have what's called absolute responsibility. So if you ever want to have it, where people look at you and go, wow, I want to be more like them, it's just a two-part formula, which is part number one, you've got to have drive. You've got to know exactly where you are headed. You have to be unabashed about your sharing about where you are headed. Maybe you want to write a best-selling book. Maybe you want to build a big company. Maybe you want a better relationship with your spouse. But the more you share your outcome that you want to achieve, that is an incredibly magnetic and attractive characteristic. The more confidence you can exude about the outcome that you want to achieve, the more magnetic and more support you will achieve. I think there's a quote like this, you know, be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. That is the intentionality. And the second half of the formula, very simply, is that of absolute responsibility. And absolute responsibility is different than traditional responsibility. Traditional responsibility is about blame or shame. So we more or less say, you know, who's responsible? And then, we want to either shame them in some way. We want to make them wrong. We want to, you know, throw them out of our community. We want to blame somebody. Absolute responsibility is about owning the outcome independent of blame or shame. So where that term comes from, absolute responsibility, is from absolute numbers. And absolute numbers are basically the distance from zero. So whether the number is positive or negative, you know, a negative five and a positive five, the absolute number is just five because it's the distance from zero. And the same thing's true with absolute responsibility. Whether the outcome you have is positive or negative, you are absolutely responsible. Now, we're not saying that you caused it. We're not saying that you're the blame for. We say that you own the outcome as it is. The reason that's so incredibly important is we cannot change what we do not own. Once we own the situation, it's the empowerment that gives us the ability to actually change it. So we in life, you know, oftentimes get stuck in victimhood. So victimhood is where somebody has wronged us in some way. Every one of us has been wronged by either a family member or somebody in business. We've been wronged. And oftentimes we want to, you know, blame them for that. And oftentimes we are waiting for them to either come and apologize or come and make it right. And what we know is this: if you've been wronged 100 times in your life, how many times out of 100 is someone going to voluntarily come over and apologize and make it right out of 100? And the answer is either zero or maybe one. So if you are waiting for somebody to come and apologize and make things right for the way they wronged you, I'm telling you right now, you can stop holding your breath. Mm-hmm. It's not going to come. And now that you know that their apology is not coming, it now empowers you to make the situation as you want. So the real opposite of empowerment is that of resentment, where you are blaming somebody else, resenting somebody else, you're hanging on to that anger, and it really doesn't serve you. So oftentimes we are resentful toward others, and we kind of carry it around like some sort of a cross to bear, and we kind of think it's, you know, comforting in some kind of way, and that makes us better because we get to be right about some way that they wronged us. But unfortunately, and we also think it's going to hurt them. You know, the more we resent them, the more it's going to hurt them. And resentment only hurts you. So resentment is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Wow. It really only hurts us. So wherever in your life that you feel that you are not making forward progress, if you are holding on to any kind of resentment towards somebody else, or you're blaming somebody else, I'm telling you right now, you can stop that right now. You own the situation as it is. You will now have the power to change it.
Well put, Peter. That is powerful right there. To forgive, not for the other person's sake, but for your own health.
Correct.
Do it for you. Okay, so I'm curious. You are very successful and well sought out, well known. How do you get up, dress up, and show up? What's your morning routine like to be that way?
So I'll take one step back. There are four legs to our physical health. I thought there was only three, but there's actually four legs to our physical health. So if you want to be, you know, live a long life and you want to be healthy and alert and fully productive, here are the four legs to our health. Number one is our diet. And obviously we know the foods we should be staying away from. We should be high sodium, processed food, high sugar foods. We need to be eating more fruits and vegetables as much as possible. Number two is exercise. We need to be exercising at least 3, if not 4 days a week for 30 minutes vigorously. Number three is sleep. And about a third of all Americans have sleep issues. And what's really important for sleep is we go to sleep and we wake up at the same time every single day, and we don't take naps. And so I'm early to bed and early to rise. I go to bed around 9:30 and I wake up at 5 every day. And I have my morning routine where I exercise, I shower, I meditate. I usually then plan out my day, go a couple minutes looking at all my tasks and plan out my day before I get productive. I like to be at my desk by 7:30 every morning. Those are my most productive hours, is usually first thing in the morning. So those are three of the legs, by the way. And the fourth leg for our physical health is that of our social connectedness. So our relationships are absolutely critical to actually our physical health. We are very social beings. We need other people in order to be happy, healthy, and wise.
Well put. The four legs to health: diet, nutrition, make sure you're eating more of the greens and the leafy greens, exercising at least 3 times a week.
A week?
Yeah. What's your form of exercise?
When I was able to go to the gym, I was a diehard CrossFitter. But because of COVID, I haven't been in CrossFit now for over 6 months. So I've become a walker, and I'll walk between 1 hour and 2 hours a day.
Oh, wow. No, that's pretty good. I'm a runner, so I do the running in the mornings to get it in. But it wakes you up when it gets done first thing in the morning. It gives you more energy to last those 12, 15-hour work days if you're pulling in those hours.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. It really is important.
Yeah. The sleep, you touched on it. I mean, over. So a lot of people are sleep deprived, and that's what affecting our diet. That's how affecting how we gain weight, where we gain weight, right? The abdominal area, because we're not getting proper sleep and the body's not getting rejuvenated. And I like that you are in to bed early and an early riser, because you're taking advantage of the chemical reaction that happens in the body between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., right? Where so as human beings, we're triggered by the daylight cycle. And so as soon as the sun sets, our melatonin starts increasing in our bodies. And it's at the highest at 10 p.m.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so if you're asleep by then, you're getting the most restorative sleep, rejuvenated sleep. And if you're up past 10, 11 o'clock, then you get a second surge of energy, because the body's like, okay, we're not sleeping. So you need to be up. As an animal, you need to hunt. You need to do something. So here's energy for you. And people misconstrue that for, okay, I'm a night person, but no, you are out, you're up too late.
Oh, wow. That's really insightful. Thank you so much for sharing that with me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I really, really like your morning routine. Thank you for sharing it. This has been very, very insightful. Like, tell us, how can we connect with you?
Well, my first book was The Brand Called You, which means that I believe in personal branding. So my website is super easy. It's petermontoya.com, petermontoya.com. And I've got a program called the High Performance Team. So if you are a business owner, we actually will take you into our course. And over an 8-week course, we'll actually teach you how to build a high performance organization. It is a leadership development course for you and for your team.
You don't want to miss this, because we have heard you speak today, Peter, and you told us the good leader is, you know, there's a y-axis where you have to be an effective leader that gets results. And then you have to be also a good leader, because you can have the effective leader who's not a good leader, as you gave us the prime example earlier. So that was really helpful for us to understand. And then you talked about soft skills. You know, soft skills, I love your definition of it. It helps you keep your job and get promoted. We undermine the power of the soft skills, EQ, integrity, time management, and the importance of actually teaching our teams within the organization these skills. So that was very insightful. And my most best takeaway is power. The ability to achieve intended results. You need power. You should boastfully and proudly say, you know, you want the power, because it gives you that opportunity to create the results you want. And so very, very helpful. I love the it factor as well. Formula, intentionality, your drive, plus your responsibility. Peter, it's been such a joy having you on the show. Thank you for adding so much value today.
Oh, Lanine, thank you for having me.
It's been a blast.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.